Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm so happy to be back in the studio after missing last week being out in warm Phoenix. We're today in rainy Georgia, but we're happy that spring is finally coming. In the studio today, I'm delighted to have as a guest Dr. Jeff Hoadley from North Atlanta Surgical Associates, one of the largest outpatient surgery groups in the United States. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Hoadley before I turn the reins over to him a little bit. He did his undergraduate training at Vanderbilt University and his medical school training in general surgery residence at Emory University, so a lot of time locally here. Then he shuffled off to the famous Cleveland Clinic up in Ohio to do a specialty surgery fellowship there, and then returned back to Atlanta and went into private practice at St. Joe's. Right?
That is correct. 1995 seems like yesterday.
No, you shouldn't have outed yourself like that so quickly, let me tell
I
you.
I started when I was 20. So
there you go. 29. All right, you're good to go. Well, let's start off by just talking a little bit about the specialty of general surgery and how it's evolved, why you got into it, and kind of some of what you've seen happening as your time has progressed.
Well, I like that you phrased it, the specialty of general surgery. It's definitely become a specialty of itself. I think historically it would have been a jack-of-all-trade to be a general surgeon. Over the course of time, subspecialties have developed, and the general surgeon has become a specialty in and of itself. We still feel like we do all of those things very well. We feel like we look at a patient globally as opposed to
a part
or just an system. Organ system, correct. Mm-hmm. And but the reality is that subspecialties have developed, and we've developed our own niche.
Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. So over time, you've seen things change as more people have kind of gotten fragmented care. You're one of the few specialties that still treats the whole patient when you're evaluating things.
That is absolutely correct, yes.
Yeah, so training for general surgery is kind of like you have to look at every organ system then. And you tell us a little bit about why you went into general surgery.
Well, I really had no idea what I wanted to do when I was growing up.
Do you now?
Well, I do now, yes.
All right.
I'm all grown up. When I was a high school senior, we could get out of the last 6 weeks of school if we presented a senior project that was accepted. And I had the opportunity to work with a general surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic for 6 weeks.
Because you got to see it live and
up
close.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Was that pretty rare for back then? Or did they let you shadow, right?
You know, it was not rare back then. Okay. Unfortunately, it's a little less. It's a little more rare now. Mm-hmm. It's a little harder to give someone that mm-hmm. opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with someone for 6 weeks, and I was hooked, and it was great.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you knew early. You were one of the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm.
Very
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Well, coming back to practice in Atlanta at St. Joe's then, you've kind of created a very unique surgical group here in Atlanta. Can you talk a little bit about your group and how unusual it is, and compared to some colleagues you have across the country, what makes you your group special?
So 7 or 8 years ago, we kind of recognized that there would be an advantage to taking our individual practices and making one big group. Certainly, there's always the economy of scale in any mm-hmm. business, but we felt like it would give us leverage with hospital insurance companies, malpractice insurance,
mm-hmm.
and at that time, although we could not have our own general surgery ambulatory surgery center, we felt like that was going to be in the works, and we wanted to be positioned to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So what geography do you cover? Like what hospitals are you at? How many general surgeons are in your group?
So there are 23 of us. The main group started amongst us at St. Joe's and Northside main campus, and then we've added groups as the years have gone on. We have a group at Northside Forsyth and a group as far south as Piedmont Fayette, and we have a group at Piedmont, Maine as well.
So you cover a large part of the metro Atlanta area for patients that come in.
Yes.
Okay, and let's tell us about one thing that's unusual is I think from the consumer standpoint, we think we hear as a patient surgery, and we're thinking we go to the hospital. So that may not be the case, right? So tell us a little bit about the evolution of ambulatory surgery centers and your own.
Well, ambulatory surgery centers have been around for a little while. Again, as general surgeons, we were kind of pigeonholed as generalists and not seen as a subspecialist, although a lot of subspecialties had grown out of general surgery. And for a very long time, we were not allowed to have our own standalone center. We could always be part of a multi-specialty center, but we could never have our own. And through
Was that through legislation?
Absolutely,
or,
yes.
So as far as certification bodies? And
that's right.
Okay.
That's right. So as individual surgeons, we had been part of multi-specialty centers, but once we formed North Atlanta Surgical, one of the things that we wanted to be part of was the entity that would lobby and get the legislature to change their mind. And people like Medical Association of Georgia, et cetera, a lot of people did a lot of good work, and
it's a cumbersome process to make a change like that.
Yes, yes.
Especially in conservative Georgia.
And so finally, don't quote me on this, but I think it was 4 years ago that they changed the laws, and within a year we had our surgery center open.
Okay, and what is the process to get your own going? Because if you have now to get certified, I'm sure there's a four-inch-thick at least book of regulations that you have to meet and some process you have to go through.
Well, someone said that you don't build a business on your own, and he was right.
Yep.
The government is right along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
Local, state, and federal, obviously. And so there is an abyss to navigate, and the first thing we had to do was had to find a business administrator and a clinical director to really get it going. Mm-hmm. And Terry Butterworth and Tracy Murray have more than done an excellent job to get it up and running.
Mm-hmm. And where is your facility?
We are right behind St. Joe's on Johnson Ferry in the Center Point building.
Pill Hill. You're right in the heart of it.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. So I know one of the things that's happened is just kind of a migration from hospitals, even hospital outpatient surgeries, to these ambulatory surgery centers. Tell us a little bit about the facility. How many ORs are there? How many procedures do you do? Kind of what from the patient perspective, if I was coming, what could I kind of expect to see there?
Well, I think one of the main advantages of a freestanding surgery center is really patient convenience and service.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to negotiate sort of the abyss of a hospital, absolutely, and all that entails.
Like a two-hour lead time, three-hour, four-hour
three-hour
lead time,
usually. Our lead time is an hour. It's very user-friendly. It's going to be much less hectic. It's going to feel much more personal.
Is it going to feel like I'm coming to a doctor's office?
We try not to, even though we are doctors and it is an office.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So it feels a
more
lot
familiar
less,
as
absolutely.
Opposed to system, I guess, is
much
my
more
point.
Personal mm-hmm. and just a better overall experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you have how many ORs there?
We have two.
Okay.
And we have the ability to expand to three.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll have that problem in the future.
Okay, and about how many cases can be done in one of these facilities in a day?
Oh, we could do anywhere from 10 to 12 operations a day, so each room could do five or six. Mm-hmm. And you know, the beauty of having a dedicated staff,
mm-hmm.
only doing one type of subspecialty is obviously to become very proficient at not only helping the doctor, helping the patient, turning the room over. And so as a physician, the convenience is great as well. Because you can really get a lot of work done in a short period of time, yet not compromise the experience for the patient.
Now, on the recovery side for the patient, on an average, I know each surgery is going to be different. We're actually going to spend some time in a few minutes talking about some of the most common procedures that you do. But how long would I expect to stay there? Would I be there a couple of hours post-op? Would I be there overnight post-op? What would be normal?
Well, it starts with showing up at only an hour beforehand.
Right.
There may have
been an A-plus there already.
Yeah, right. There may have been a telephone interview with anesthesia a day or two before, but that doesn't take long, obviously. Most of the procedures that we do at the center, on average, would be anywhere from 30 to an hour and a half would be
duration.
A long. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you're an hour and a half recovery. Okay. So I think three and a half hours is
kind of amazing, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. So that's a great story, too. I kind of wanted to just share with you some information, see if you agree or not. I was doing some research on what the scope of ambulatory surgery centers is becoming. And one of the things I found that Medicare right now has over 70 different types of procedures certified for reimbursement in ambulatory surgery centers. So it's continuing to grow as different surgical techniques and technology are available, and patients recover faster, like laparoscopy is available as opposed to big incisions and you're staying overnight somewhere.
Right. I agree with that wholeheartedly. A lot of the technology and a lot of things that general surgeons have become very proficient is using the laparoscope, which is really just making – you're doing the same operation. You're just gaining access through smaller incisions, which translate into, you know, less pain and recovery. But in addition, I think anesthesia has really understood and evolved with an outpatient surgery center in terms of doing a great job of proactively treating patients for the expected postoperative nausea, et cetera, et cetera. And so they've changed their focus from hospital to ambulatory surgery center as well, as have the surgeons. And that just bodes well for the patients. And so the technology has advanced, anesthesia has advanced, and it just makes it for a much better experience.
Yeah, so I think that's an important point because I think a lot of patients wonder, if I go to an ambulatory center, will I actually have the same technology and resources available that I would have at the big house kind of hospital setting? So
they absolutely would have the same, assuming it's a procedure that qualifies for outpatient surgery.
Right.
If it didn't qualify for outpatient surgery, well, that's where a hospital really, you know.
Yeah, there's still some cases that
absolutely,
are going to have to go. So that's a great time to jump forward and segue into what kind of patients are appropriate for ambulatory outpatient versus inpatient?
I think it's a combination. I think it's not only the type of procedure, but I think it's also the health of the patient. And with that said, that is not defined by a chronologic number, the age of the patient. So we do service Medicare patients. It's more based on the physiology of the patient and how healthy they are. And then, in addition, it depends on the type of procedure. And there are some procedures that, you know, by definition are going to require admission and a few days in the hospital, and that's really the role of the hospital for sure. And then there are others that don't fall into that category. And some that used to be in that category have moved to the outpatient surgery center category.
Is managed care driving that?
Or
technology, or probably many things then?
Let me say this. I think that insurance should be driving that in some ways, because the model for ambulatory surgery center is such that the cost is much lower than the hospital. And so the same procedure done at our surgery center and done at the hospital for the insurance company would be an astronomically different number.
I actually researched that, and so let's see if you agree with that. I found, like, on an average, if you had a general procedure done in an ambulatory center, you could expect a bill of around $6,000 to $8,000 compared to that same procedure in the hospital may run upwards of $20,000 to $30,000.
I would agree with that ratio. I think $6,000 to $8,000 may still be a little high.
Okay.
One thing that we can definitely do a better job is managing the cost and cash flow. Without compromising the patient.
The quality.
Absolutely.
Yes,
and that can be done. Yeah. That absolutely can be done. And we do it every day.
Right.
And so I think that for patients with high deductible plans and even self-pay patients, I think they would be pleasantly surprised to find out the comprehensive bill that we could provide excellent care and yet financially be very affordable.
Now, on the billing side, if I am a patient in your center, would I get, like at the hospital, I think I'm going to the hospital, but I still get the physician bill, the hospital bill, the anesthesia bill, the radiology. I still get many, many bills for what I think is one occurrence. How does that work with your center?
Similarly,
okay.
For sure you would get a bill from the surgeon, a bill from anesthesia,
and the facility.
Right.
Okay.
Occasionally, we do obviously have pathology. We have a contract.
So there may be labs.
Yep. Not so much lab work. A lot of the, and this is true for the hospital too, a lot of the protocols preoperatively have really recognized the fact that we can get away from a whole big workup on patients and really target it for their needs. So,
do they have the pre-op in your private office, like prior to the surgery, just like you would if you were going to be surgery day admitted to the hospital?
Right. If someone is recognized either by the surgeon or by the preoperative assessment by anesthesia as needing something, such as a lab or blood draw, et cetera, we have an understanding with office in our building that will take care of that for us.
Okay, so they can still be managed right then.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
And as just to give the listeners a feel for the incidents and see if you agree with this, I read something like about 10 years ago, about 16% of surgeries were performed on an outpatient basis and probably not as much in an ambulatory surgery center. These days, more than upwards of 60%. Are performed in outpatient settings, and a lot of them, the majority of them, are in ambulatory surgery centers. Would you agree with that?
Wholeheartedly. I still think that that 16%, probably even 10 years ago, should have been higher, but there just wasn't a prevalence of surgery centers, and especially, you know, general surgery centers. You know, we touched on it a little bit, technology, advancements in anesthesia, et cetera, have allowed for us to, you know, broaden the number of patients that qualify for a surgery center.
Now, how does the hospital view? Do they view you as a competitor, an adjunct, both in terms of outpatient? Because they still have outpatient capabilities themselves.
Yeah, they still have.
But you also have operating privileges in Northside and St. Joe's, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we would never.
So as far as the doctor's concerned, you're flexible. You're going to go to the right location for the patient.
Yes. We would never abandon that part of our practice. I mean, you know, as a general surgeon, you do take care of very, very sick patients. But I think that, you know, like anything else, this is just an evolution. And I think that a lot of hospitals are either reaching out to centers and maybe purchasing them or wanting to be a partner in them and offering that service that has been offered outside of the hospital in just sort of a more global sense so that, you know, St. Joe's not only has their main hospital, but they may have satellite surgery centers, and they that may be already a surgery center that's established and they set up a relationship with them. But you know, there are so many changes in healthcare right now. I'm sure they've got just a zillion, you know, things going on. And that's just one piece of the puzzle for them, right?
Now, with the Accountable Care Act coming up, I know as healthcare professionals, you, me, everybody's kind of trying to figure out and keeping an eye on what happens, what's happening now and kind of what comes into play in 2014. Regulatory-wise, what do you think this is going to mean? There'll be more people insured. There'll be a continuation for cost savings incentives. What do you? How is that going to affect your business? Have you thought about that?
Well, we have. I'm not sure that we'll get all the coverage that's been billed. I think there will still be
holes. So,
yes, many.
Well, if the government's in charge, it won't be on time, and there'll be holes. Yeah.
Right. We've just now started reading.
See, we
said
we'd get to politics, didn't we? We said it was going to come out.
Right,
it did.
Right. So now we're actually reading the ACA.
Over, right.
Before we just voted in. Now it's the reading part. So as we actually read it. There's more and more things coming to fruition. But, you know, I think that the Ambulatory Surgery Center is, if the ACA is anything, it's about attempting to control cost. I don't know how efficient that will be in doing that. Time will tell. But I think right now there's little debate that an ASC offers that. Mm-hmm. Right now. Okay. So I think that going forward, I don't think the ASC will ever be abandoned. And for self-pay patients and for those who still maintain a high deductible plan who are forced to shop their health care, whether it's their prescription drugs or their surgery, they will always be looking for those opportunities.
Yeah, and I think we see that as a trend continuing. I know our sponsor, Healthgate, their entire business is predicated upon more and more consumers, not just non-covered people, but high $5,000, $10,000 deductible patients being very active shoppers in the market. So I hear what you're saying. Well, I want to move on just a little bit to talk about some specific and most common kind of procedures that you do. We talked about, before we went on air, one of your special niches is actually in sports hernia repair. So you've kind of made a name for yourself with all the ball players in town, I think, with the Thrashers and the Hawks and all of that. You might talk a minute about how you got that kind of gig.
Well, it developed 5 or 6 years ago. A friend of mine, Dr. Scott Gologli, was the Thrashers physician, and then he was offered the position with the Falcons. And, you know, groin injuries are very common amongst any athlete, but especially in hockey and soccer players and football players as well. And so there was a need to be filled in terms of servicing those athletes. So he asked me to step into that role, and I did some research and started seeing patients and sort of developing what my concept is of a sports hernia and the treatment of, and so it just kind of grew from there.
Very good. So we're going to start with hernias, not just sports injuries, but that's actually one of the most common procedures that you do in an ASC, is that right?
Right. So the repair of a true hernia is our most common operation. So what is a true hernia? A true hernia is what the layman would think of as a bulging or a protrusion, whereas a sports hernia is really more of a tendon or ligament injury. So there is not going to be the bulging and protrusion. So they really diverge in their treatment plan. But fixing hernias is really the main niche of the general surgeon. That has certainly advanced with the advent of the laparoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And it has allowed us to repair all types of hernias, from groin to umbilical to incisional hernias.
So let's distinguish between those for the consumer listeners.
Right.
So let's start with inguinal hernia.
So an inguinal or groin hernia would be down in the low abdomen. It's probably the most common hernia type, more common in men, but women do develop hernias. And, you know, that is really just a loss of integrity of the tissue that keeps everything in.
Mm-hmm.
So now it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be painful and with time can become quite large. And so, you know, most patients are electing to get those fixed. And that is clearly an outpatient procedure. and can be done both open with an incision or a smaller incision with a laparoscope. Mm-hmm. And everyone in our group is very proficient at that
now,
procedure.
When I sit as a consumer and I look at a TV of all the lawyer advertising about all this mesh stuff that, you know, we mm-hmm. use, can you speak to that a little bit? Or is it mostly incisional repair, or are you actually using some of these meshes that as a consumer I would see on TV?
Mesh, I think, gets a bad name.
Okay.
You know, I'm just old enough to have repaired inguinal hernias without mesh, and the pain the patient had and the recurrence rate, they were across the board unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So we advanced to tension-free repairs mm-hmm. using mesh, and a lot of the post-operative groin pain that patients will get with mesh, it's pretty rare, mm-hmm. does occur, but it was well described in pre-mesh mm-hmm. patients. So when I say mesh gets a bad name, I think we don't really recognize how it has really served patients over the past 10 to 15 mm-hmm. Years in terms of less pain after surgery, sooner return to activity, and really the avoidance of a second or third operation, mm-hmm. which was pretty common with just a tissue non-mesh repair in the mm-hmm. past. Mm-hmm. So some of these known recognized post-operative complications are being blamed on the mesh, mm-hmm. and there are some types of mesh, and we're well aware of what those are, and we have access to that information, and when there's a recall or there's a problem, mm-hmm. Trust me, there's so many types of mesh out there. We have so many choices that mm-hmm. that we can leave
right
those on
the
back
right
shelf.
Yeah.
That's right,
so
and move on. That's right.
That sounds
that's
very
right.
good. Okay, so outside of inguinal hernias, umbilical hernias, any distinction there we need to make for the listeners?
Well, that's an Audi. And if you've had an Audi your whole life, you have an umbilical hernia. Uh-huh. That's the... And so those are very common and less prone to complications of bowel obstruction, which is a little bit more common in the inguinal hernia. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they can be pretty large and unsightly. They can be symptomatic as well in terms of pain, especially mm-hmm. when someone's exercising. The majority of those can be fixed without mesh mm-hmm. and but probably half of them do require a mesh repair for the same advantages that you gain mm-hmm. From the inguinal hernia repair.
Mm-hmm. And then incisional hernia repairs? Anything special
right.
or noteworthy about them?
Yeah, some of the larger incisional hernias, that is still one of those hospital-type mm-hmm. operations, and it mm-hmm. can be very involved. But with the advent of the laparoscope, we're able to handle some of the smaller incisional hernias on an outpatient basis and really we're able to treat those patients in a way that maybe in the past they couldn't have been. They would have had a bigger incision. They would have had a longer hospital stay. And so in select patients, and so often it's about patient selection, mm-hmm. They gain a lot of benefit from the laparoscope in the outpatient surgery center.
Yeah, now, what percent, if you had to guess, of your surgeries are you doing laparoscopy versus not?
Probably
70%. Wow, that's higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot.
Probably 70%.
Okay,
yeah.
Very
and
good.
And that's obviously grown over the past 10 years. Not only have we become much more comfortable and more proficient, but the technology has allowed us to, you know,
have
do
more
some
uses
more
for the same tools.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talking about laparoscopy, another common procedure that you do is gallbladder removal or cholecystectomy. So let's talk about that for a few minutes. So, boy, that's a miserable thing when you're a patient, sleeping,
right.
sitting up, and acute pain. And
right. So patients will ask me, what is the role of the gallbladder? And I say, it's for my kids to go to the school of their choice because that is the most common operation for a general surgeon. The gallbladder's function is, the term for us is vestigial, which means not much, quite frankly. The liver does the job of making the bile, and people can live without their gallbladder, but when it becomes a problem, it's pretty miserable.
Quality of life kind of thing.
Yeah, not
more
so good.
More than the
right,
medical
exactly.
necessity
right.
that you have to live with it.
And that was probably, that procedure was the one that really took the general surgeon and sort of introduced him to the laparoscope and really got us thinking that, you know, we need to get into this realm. I think the GYN mm-hmm. surgeons were ahead of us with a laparoscope.
Mm-hmm.
But in the early 90s, it was recognized that removing the gallbladder with a laparoscope was way, way better for the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And that we really needed to get on board with this. And then it just sort of springboarded from there. And now we do just so many of our procedures mm-hmm. with a laparoscope.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that gallbladder surgery more prevalent in men or women or about even?
Oh, maybe traditionally you would learn that it's a little bit more prevalent in women. It's definitely more prevalent in the Western world. We just process
so
cholesterol. That's
processed
right.
food.
That's
yeah,
right.
Our diet,
that's
diet
right.
related issues.
That is,
sure.
is clearly a diet related issue, and it's almost unavoidable,
mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Okay, and the last type of surgery that's very common in an ASC we were going to talk about is thyroid surgeries.
Yes, that is a procedure that traditionally had been done in the hospital.
So are we talking about thyroidectomies?
Like that's
for
correct.
Cancer patients?
For cancer, yeah. And that's our nodule that you're concerned is cancerous and
mm-hmm.
you may not know that up front, but mm-hmm. you're doing the operation to define that process.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we recognize that not everyone needs to spend a night in the hospital. And again, anesthesia has become much more comfortable treating those patients. And we may watch them a little bit longer. Their stay at the ambulatory surgery center may be a little bit longer, but beyond that, it's been a very successful transition to an ambulatory mm-hmm. surgery center
and
for us.
Okay, very good. And for these three common types of procedures that you do in an ASC, are there potential complications? Are they the same? Like, what would recovery, what do you kind of discharge patients with discharge instructions, since you have them captive, if you would, for as long of a period?
Right. So one of the advantages of a surgery center over a hospital, you know, a hospital will, you know, obviously take care of very sick folks, and whereas a surgery center doesn't necessarily do that. And so our infection rate is improved over a hospital. That's little bit.
That's actually hot news right now. Avoiding the hospital because of the infection rate.
Right. Performance improvement, mm-hmm. Quality assurance is what it used to be called.
Mm-hmm.
Metrics, measuring these things, you know, through the ACA and Medicare, you know, they're really tying payment to performance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you'll never get it to zero.
Mm-hmm.
It just, that's, you know. We would like to get motor vehicle accidents down mm-hmm. to zero, but we all know that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get it down to an expected low rate. And I think right now, I mean, an ASC has achieved that. I don't think that we could drive our infection rate any lower.
What's the discrepancy between a hospital infection rate and an ASC, would you guess?
Well, again, you know, it's a little apples to oranges, okay. So I want to be fair. A hospital is taking care of very sick people.
Right.
I tell folks that it's almost like a petri dish in a hospital.
That's almost a good analogy.
By definition, yeah. You know.
And less and less antibiotics work in a
yes,
that petri
dish. Yes, more
resistance.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. More resistance. And, you know, we're able to do more things for people. They get sicker. Sometimes we don't make them all the way better.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a breeding ground for bacteria. And so, you know, going into the hospital, even if it's the attached outpatient surgery center,
mm-hmm.
You know, exposes you just a little bit more mm-hmm. To those bacteria. some of those bacteria have moved into the community, unfortunately. And an example would be MRSA. Mm-hmm. That used to be just a hospital infection, and now I see it in laymen walking in off the street with an infection. So it has moved out. But an ambulatory surgery center just offers you as much protection as you can get in this day and age against an infection.
Mm-hmm. So back to the discharge. So you'd watch them carefully. You'd have them report any fevers, or you're looking for infection was where we left off.
Yeah, I mean, after surgery, obviously pain is an issue in controlling someone's pain. And then when you're controlling pain, some of the side effects of the medication, constipation, you know, and then someone has had an incision, and so now they get in sort of this negative feedback, and so we want to be proactive about educating them about not getting in that position. And nausea is an issue. I will say that early on in my practice, I would get a sense that I would have to admit patients who were supposed to be outpatient into the hospital for management of their nausea.
Wow.
That is an advance.
Sounds severe.
Yeah. But that's an advance that really I need to give the nod to the anesthesia folks.
Better management.
Just more proactive and much more aggressive in treating it upfront rather than when it occurs, and then it's hard to get a handle on. So, and that's really just as we have moved to outpatient surgery center, you've got to adapt to that. And if you can't go home till the last patient goes home, and a lot of patients are being admitted and the surgeons aren't happy about that, then you change the game plan.
Right.
And they've done a great job of that.
That's great. Okay, so the last topic that we have to talk about today, and we've kind of touched on a few of these things, is just kind of what's coming around the corner for ambulatory surgery centers. So we've talked about consumer shopping and high deductibles and the health savings account model as we go forward, kind of fitting in with the ASC model as a cost savings opportunity. We've talked a little bit about technology advances like the laparoscope and seeing the same kind of technology in the hospitals and the ASC. Any technology changes coming down the pike that are noteworthy that you think will move? A good one I can think of is like we used to only see things like robotic surgeries in the hospital. I mean, do you see them ever moving into an outpatient setting or that kind of technology?
The robot has moved into a few outpatient surgery centers. It has not moved into ours. We don't have any plans as of yet. But I think that if that technology becomes something that is going to be an advantage for the patients, for us, if it's cost effective, then, you know, I think probably the most important thing we need to do is be flexible. A lot of things make sense in theory, and then in function they don't, and so we have to be sensitive to that. But I don't know that there's a big paradigm shift coming. I think there over the past 10 years that paradigm shift has occurred. That's right. And but now I think it's just education, letting people know the advantages of a surgery center, both from a convenience and service standpoint, and then obviously a financial standpoint, which is becoming more and more important. And I think that the surgery centers will just become a larger player in the future.
Very good. All right. Well, that concludes our visit for today. I told you you'd look at the clock and say, oh, my God, time has just flown by. But I want to give you an opportunity and me an opportunity to let the listeners and the referring physicians know how to reach you. You're the largest surgical group here in Atlanta. You said perhaps the nation in terms of an organized network of physicians in an ASC. Is that right?
Yeah, I know that in Georgia we're the largest general surgeon only group, and I think in the United States we are.
I'll give you that.
Yeah,
just like the gimme putt.
There you go.
All right, so for patients to reach you, you have a website.
Got to have a website. 2013.
Very good. www.nasa.com. NASASurgeryATL.com. NASASurgeryATL.com. We'll get them online to you.
Yeah.
And then the bat phone or the hotline to your office directly, 404-255-4901. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Anything, any parting thoughts that you want to lend on this subject of ASCs, your practice, or patient adoption, or get with the program, guys? It's a great option that's more and more prevalent. And actually, I did find in my research, Georgia alone had over 18,000 of these procedures. The highest record was last year from the demographics that I was able to find. So
good. The only thing we have to do is make sure that all 18,000 are done at my center. So
well,
that's our challenge going forward.
That sounds good. Well, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Tanya.
I really appreciate
it.
And for you listeners, please tune in next time, and we'll be looking forward to talking with you then. And please visit our sponsor's website, www.healthgate.com. Have a great afternoon.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.